This is an Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash production.
Welcome in to another amazing, fantabulous episode of the Take It Easy radio show. My name is Kyle. I will be your host with the most here for the next hour. Thank you to everybody tuning in here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. Thank you to everyone tuning in on the Take It Easy podcast network. Here on the weekend, I am appreciative of everyone who takes the time to download and listen to all of the content that we have coming out, both on Take It Easy and on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash. All kinds of great stuff to get to today. I'm happy to be here. It's 102 on the West Coast. It is Thursday. We got football. We got NHL Game 6. We got NBA Game 2. We got 2 weeks until playoff baseball is fully underway. As of yesterday, there will be 8 MLB playoff games on one single day on that Wednesday, the 30th. It's going to be madness. It's going to be fun. It's going to be wacky. It's also just 2 radio shows away from actually being in existence. So much to get to, so much to talk about. I also want to get to college football. With this crazy story going on and the politicization of the sport, et cetera, there are new developments going on there. I like to start off the show, though, because this is a live episode and because this is in the middle of the afternoon instead of the radio show when I'm recording in the morning, we can talk about the Red Sox and the Marlins, which are currently in the bottom of the 8th. The Red Sox have a 2-run lead over the Marlins. The Red Sox are out of it. The Marlins are certainly in playoff positioning. They are America's team at this point. We talked about it a little bit on the show on Monday or Tuesday. We talked about the Marlins and how the Miami Marlins are America's team. They were the epitome of a laughingstock in baseball, but the rebuild works. They are a testament to the power of the rebuild and just how much teams can change overnight in that sport. Really, any sport. At least with the American format of the worst teams get the top draft picks, it makes everything different than when you have relegation as a possibility and teams are incentivized to avoid relegation because of the financial burdens that it causes. It's a testament to the Miami Marlins and a testament to the power of the rebuild in American professional sports. Also, the White Sox trying to clinch their first playoff spot since 2006, one win away. They currently trail 3-2 against division rivals, the Minnesota Twins, headed into the middle of the 6th inning. Great games going on all throughout. Warm-ups going on, D-backs and Angels and the Giants and the Mariners getting ready to start. The game that's in San Francisco, but the Mariners are the home team because obviously 270 on the air quality index. Unhealthy to breathe in up there in Seattle and Oregon. Fortunately, where I am, we are at the end. There's no new smoke. The wind's blowing it out. We can finally go outside. We have blue skies for the first time in about 5 weeks. It is awesome here in Northern California. Other places in Northern California, not so much, and all of that that we were talking about is being pushed on over to Nevada. That's what's going on in the world of sports right now. So let's get into the content business for today's episode. And I want to start off with college football because there's been so much going on with sports, and obviously game two of the NBA playoffs start in a couple hours. And look, we've spent the last 2 days laughing at the Clippers and breaking down the Nuggets and the Heat and Bam Adebayo's block. And then you have the NFL dominates your Friday, it dominates your Sunday, and it dominates your Monday because the NFL is king in the American sports landscape. I would bet you that the ratings tonight for NBA playoffs versus NFL, I know the NFL game is on NFL Network, but I think the NFL will do all right numbers even compared to an NBA playoff game tonight. Because the game's only on NFL Network, less people are going to have access to it. But if the game were on Fox, like that 49ers and Raiders game, the Nick Mullins game a couple of years ago, doing double the rate of a Sixers Celtics NBA game, football is king in the American sports landscape. College football is just kind of there at this point because there are no real great matchups. At this point, only a few of the conferences we thought had, a few of the conferences had started, and it seemed like even fewer were going to get through the season. But now here we are where the Big Ten is going to start the season on time as a calling in a political favor. And testing every day and realizing that you got to go get the money as soon as possible. And the Pac-12, it looks like, is going to cave, not just in the administration of the Pac-12 and the athletic directors and the coaches are going to cave, but also it seems that the players might end up caving on their demands in the We Are United movement. And full disclosure, I will always, always, always be pro-labor in these situations, not because I inherently have a moral conflict between any of these, like a lot of people do, or not because I lean one side or not. I try to remain apolitical when discussing these things, and I'm a voter by voter issue, or I'm an issue by issue voter. That makes more sense than a voter by voter. That doesn't really make sense. Issue by issue, you go about it, but I'm always going to be pro-labor because nobody is looking out for them if we don't. If we who follow college football and we who follow baseball and we who follow basketball, baseball, or any sport that has an actual labor union, if we're not going to look out for pro player, they at least have union representation, and it's always going to go back and forth, and people with money and power will take advantage of you. When given the opportunity. But for college football, they don't have any labor movement. So nobody is looking out for them unless we do it, unless we bring a light to what is going on with amateurism and college sports and the monetization of collegiate athletes. If we don't look out for them, nobody else will. And so political favors were being called in to get these seasons underway, and players, whether they recognized it or not, and they really wanted to play college football, what makes me sad is that they're giving away the leverage that they have because they don't have any power, but at the very least they have leverage in this circumstance, and it looks like they're giving away all the leverage just so they can play a football season here. As if things were totally normal. And look, I get it that there are big time issues, and I can't even imagine. No, I can't imagine. Apologies. I can imagine putting a labor movement front and center on your focus when there are other things going on in the world and people that want to make you think other things in the world are more important. But there is no better time to push for a labor movement than right now. Opportunity doesn't come along very often, and the We Are United movement in the Pac-12 was a big example of that. And we're seeing people opt out. We're seeing people with actual talent and prospects just going off to the NFL, and the rest of the people are not holding firm, it would appear. It appears that the quote-unquote union is being broken at this point, which is a bit of an unfortunate situation because of how important it is at this stage of the game. And what's strange about all this is college football is in this difficult position of, look, they need that money. The white administrators are going to get a lot of the money, whatever rate it's going to be, because they don't really care if anyone's watching. They just kind of need the games. And this is the part that's frustrated me over the last few months is, A, it's not even good talking about these issues anymore because now politics is front and center when it comes to college football. The restart of college football is being used as a campaign platform in the next election. So that has hijacked everything that we're talking about here. And it's never a fun issue when you get involved in these waters, because when people want to have these conversations, very few people are apolitical about them. And this is unfortunate because then the deep emotions or the deep logic get involved and you have people butting heads at each other, because the political climate of America post the 1990s has become extremely, extremely polarizing, as in one group is going to go to their corner, is going to go to the other corner, and everyone is going to be in that position for the long term. And it's hard to move people off those issues. So now college football has been hijacked there. Since we were talking about labor movements, I think it was our first episode, we were talking about We Are United and using the leverage and being pro-athlete and having actual strikes and gaining leverage and incentivizing coaches to voluntarily start paying players. And look, it's happening right now. Agents are the ones who have to act as the middlemen in these circumstances between the players and the people who are funding them, i.e. Shoe contracts, apparel brands, sponsorships. The agent just has to act as a middleman right now and do it under the table instead of right in front of all of us. If you want more on that, I would watch The Scheme on HBO. It's the story of that Christian Dawkins and college basketball and all the black assistant coaches that took the fall in the legal system because of what was going on in college basketball and trying to close Pandora's box after it's been open for 50 years, instead of just realizing, hey, let's just give in and change, because why are we fighting this? It's a good thing for collegiate athletes to monetize off their value. And now we find ourselves in this position where politicization has totally taken it over, and Trevor Lawrence is caught in the middle of that politicization because he's teetering the line on both issues. And now football has started, and that's faded to the blackness, and people are making Black Lives Matter statements, and people are putting names of people on the back of helmets and all that jazz that is symbolic, because the only thing we can do in the short term is symbolic gestures, because actual change takes a long time. The wheels are in motion for some kind of change, but it's not going to come at the rate you want. It's going to take generations. And so the only thing we can do is symbolic gestures of unity and symbolic nameplates of people on the back of helmets and names on the back of jerseys and social justice statements. It's the only thing we can do at a time when what we're talking about is systemic change over decades. College football has fought for decades, shamateurism collapsing. And now we're at the fourth quarter. We are at the end game of shamateurism. Laws in Florida, California, New Jersey, New York have all been put in place that are going to set the wheels in motion for the end of shamateurism. And the way that you speed up the process is incentivizing coaches and incentivizing the NCAA to pay players. For the NCAA, that's impossible, because the reason colleges have professional sports teams is because they can make a bleep ton of money off of those sports, because they are paying. The way you profit is by increasing revenue and decreasing costs. basic economics. They have really low cost because they are paying the athletes pennies on the dollar. In fact, they did a study of this at Drexel University about how they are getting paid 16 cents on the dollar with their scholarship and their fund facilities and their gear that they get from the school. They are getting paid 16 cents on the dollar for their entire labor during their 4 years of school. Over 4 years at a school, your scholarship and food and all the stuff that you're given is 16 cents on the dollar of what you are worth to the university. And so what we're finding now, as politicization takes over, I look at it and say, I don't feel good watching college football. And there's too much sports going on already that I just can't keep up with it at this point. And to compound all of this, there's nothing I can do in solidarity other than keep talking about it. But then again, who is college football's fan base? They lean to a very specific political spectrum. Removing politics out of all of it, there is a stronger correlation between the heart and soul of college football fans, apart from the students, which is another conversation, and who are fans of college football and their political leanings. And so now a campaign strategy is the restart of college football. And it's really bleep and effective because for some people, that's literally all they care about. Literally all they care about. One issue voters, which is freedom and college football. Literally one issue voters in swing states, nonetheless, places like Ohio, Wisconsin, Michigan, Iowa, Nebraska. It is an ingenious strategy. Shout out to the Republican Party. It is a genius strategy to get a reelection campaign, but it has also made my conversation and my love of college football go down because I am pro-labor, and labor is empowering the people who don't want to change the system. It is a one-issue thing, and unfortunately, in America, most people side with labor. I'm sorry, most people side with ownership. Most people in America side with administrators. I don't know why the mindset is. And I think a big part of it is this brainwashing notion that corporate America has put in our media, in our advertisements, in our social networking, actually is a good one too. Corporation has done with influencing politicians, influencing the things we see and the things we experience. A lot of that has to do with how we get to the stage where public opinion, especially in collegiate football, is pro-administrators and pro-white people getting their money. How do we know this? Because the ACC, SEC, and Big 12 come in Southern America. There was an amazing graph back in August about those three conferences and putting it on a map and then putting it on a map of the Confederacy during the Civil War. It is fairly alarming how that has turned out. And then you can put that next to a map of the 2016 election results in blue and red states. And it is fairly startling to see just how aligned they are. And so now college football is underway. It's going to get underway. It's going to be in full swing. Everyone's going to get their crack at it, and we're going to play, probably aren't going to play bowl games. Maybe they'll play bowl games because, again, money is involved there, and, you know, you can play in an empty stadium in Shreveport. Is there an incentive for them to play those bowl games? There's obviously an incentive to play the playoff and the major bowl games because that'll happen no matter what. But in regards to the college football season, it's all getting underway. And look, I got to be honest, in a football term at this point, with everything becoming political and becoming part of a campaign movement, which is, again, like I said, shout out to the Republican Party. It is a genius, genius strategy to get reelected. Using sports as a strategy to get reelected is genius. It is an amazing idea, and I would have done exactly the same thing, regardless of which political party. If I knew sports were a way to help me get reelected, sometimes sports are a one-issue vote for some people, as crazy as that seems. Freedom makes you a one-issue voter, especially people that come from places where anti-communist rhetoric is placed a lot in the lexicon, and, you know, people who migrate from Cuba and people who migrate from Venezuela and migrate from Russia, et cetera, et cetera. Sometimes you can find one-issue voters on these topics. And what you're going to see is sports are going to help swing an election. Whether it swings the result, I don't know, but it's going to swing the election, no question about it. Genius strategy. But it makes me hate college football a little bit more because I am pro-labor. And labor is getting crushed right here when they have no power. And so what are you going to do? If you really truly object to this, what are you going to do? The only option labor has when they don't have any power, this is just in business, period. The only power they actually have is to go on strike. And the Pac-12 kind of did that. They tried to do it, and the Pac-12 just punted on the season because of a combination of health protocols, a combination of labor movement, and the fact that they come from liberal states. We're talking about California, Oregon, Washington, Arizona, and Utah and Colorado. Like, we're talking very liberal states that these universities are in, which means you're probably going to have liberal administration. And as COVID-19 has become the most politicized issue in America, I'd argue it's tied for first with race at this point. As COVID-19 becomes politicized in America, you've seen people who lean liberal taking higher and higher precautions when it comes to COVID-19, sometimes to the detriment of general well-being and mental health and common sense and, dare I say, the economy, even though the economy, the word itself, is laced in pro-Republican lexicon, basically. When you just say the economy, you are uttering Republican coded language. And so here we are in this situation with college football where I'm just going to punt on it. Like, I'm just going to punt and come back in 2021. And other people, look, understanding the hypocrisy is fair. I am hypocritical all the time, and I know it. I mean, I am the Laker fan of a childhood. Now, I've slowly moved away from the Lakers as I've become more of an objective journalist. But certainly the team of my childhood, the Lakers, hardcore Laker fan. We're going to get everybody. We're the big market who crushes the little guys. But then my favorite team in the entire world is the San Diego Padres, who represent everything. The Dodgers, this big market team, what the Lakers represent is what I despise more than anything. Hypocrisy is in sports, and that's okay because sports don't matter. Hypocrisy in sports is fine because it does not matter. Hypocrisy matters when you are manipulating people by being in a position of power. That is where we don't like hypocrisy. Check out Jerry Falwell's story if you don't know anything about that. That kind of hypocrisy is bad. Because that stuff does matter. You're talking about manipulating thousands of people's lives. Check out that story if you're interested. In sports, hypocrisy is funny. Hypocrisy is part of sports. One minute you're crushing somebody, the next minute you love them. It's fine because hypocrisy in sports doesn't matter. Why? Because sports don't matter. And sometimes it's just part of a bit. And so a lot of people are open to their hypocrisies, and I look at it and I say, look, I'm just not going to do this. I think I'm just going to punt on this college football season and come back in 2021. Maybe when everything goes back to the way where everything calms down a bit, maybe I'll go back to that. And especially post-election, maybe I'll just wait until after the election when everything slows down again. And I think everything just needs to slow down in college sports because, look, I've been talking for almost 30 minutes on this issue, and the big conclusion I have is just everything's too hot right now. Whether it be a labor movement, which has a real opportunity, whether it be pro-labor versus anti-whatever, as politics seep deeply into the sport when we talk about majority black athletes who are, regardless of political leaning, because it's true that 90% of black people vote liberal, because why wouldn't you vote? Why would you vote as being a black person? Why would you vote for a party that embraces white power? So 90% vote that way. So you're talking about those kids who want to make an impact and come from a younger generation that is pushing back against the old ways, but doesn't have the strength at this point to push back in, doesn't have the strength in numbers to push back against the old avant-garde way of America. What you're seeing is them being by the hand of the white administrator and of the people in power, which includes all the way up to the president of the United States, the people in power squashing them, basically squashing the rebellion, because the only, when you have no power, like I said before, when you have no power, the only way to respond is to withhold your labor. And the Pac-12 kind of did that, and the strike has already been broken as the Pac-12 now is releasing a we-want-to-play statement of their own from the players. It appears that fracture has been created and the strike has been broken. And everyone's going to go back to work, and the system is going to continue as it is. And despite the opportunity that was presented, I think everything is just too hot right now. Why? Because these kids don't have any power. They have leverage, but they do not have any power in this situation, and everything is too hot, and the actual power can crush them immediately, like a strike at a coal mine in West Virginia or Kentucky in the 1970s. They can just immediately crush the strike, and it's over. And unfortunately, that's the power dynamics in America because of things like the baby boomer generation and the fact that this push-pull between older and younger generations is being outweighed because of the baby boomer generation and because of post-World War II booms and because those people now assume leadership positions. It's why we have a 78-year-old and a 74-year-old as our two presidential candidates. The push too strong at this point, and sooner or later we're going to get there, but when it comes to college football, everything is just too hot right now. Well, it looks like the end is near for the Miami Marlins. They have fallen to the Boston Red Sox 5-3. Tough break, Miami dropping 2 out of 3 to Boston after winning 5 out of 7 against the Phillies. That one's just a tough break. Let's go to the NFL now. And for those of you listening on Open Talk Radio or listening on the podcast feed, check out the episode we did today or Thursday, whenever you're listening, with Stripe Hype Bengals. We broke down about 5 or 6 of the NFL games this weekend. Sunday morning, we'll have more of these breakdowns. But in the short term, I would like to talk about one of these games this weekend that fascinates me the most. And it's not the most sexy of the matchups. It's not Lamar Jackson versus Deshaun Watson. And it's not the Falcons versus the Cowboys, despite the fact both those teams are 0-1 at this point. And it's not the Cam Newton versus Russell Wilson matchup that seems super fascinating this weekend on Sunday Night Football. It's none of those. It is actually a game from Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis, where the Minnesota Vikings, who just their defense looked putrid this weekend, the Minnesota Vikings take on the Indianapolis Colts, who lost to Jacksonville last week. Both these teams are 0-1. Both are working very desperately to avoid that 0-2 start to the season. For the Colts, look, one loss at Jacksonville is not the end-all be-all. Sure, it hurts because it equals dropping a game against the Texans and Titans, who are going to win in their trips to Jacksonville because the Jaguars aren't actually that good. I've said it all week. Gardner Minshew is never going to have a game like he had on Sunday where he completes 95% of his passes for three touchdowns and they beat the Colts by 7 points. And Marlon Mack tears his Achilles in the first quarter of that game. There shouldn't be panic in Indianapolis, even if they lose to Minnesota, which is going to hurt. Because, again, I don't think Minnesota is better than a 7-9 team. They might benefit from winning a game or two against the Bears and Lions. But Minnesota is not a great team. But the Colts have the easiest schedule in the league. They play no games this year harder than the Ravens, the Steelers, and the Packers. I think their next hardest game after that is, like, maybe this Minnesota game. Or maybe the Texans. The Texans might be their next hardest game on the schedule. And the Texans, after we saw last week what happened against the Chiefs and what we're probably going to see when they play Baltimore this weekend, they're going to beat all the crappy teams in the league, but the Texans are going to lose to most of the good teams, and they're going to be hanging around that seventh wild card for most of the season. But there should be no panic about this in Indianapolis, mostly because, despite the fact the Colts dropped a game to the Texans and Titans, they are more than one game better than the Texans and Titans. The Texans are going to hang around 9-7, that seventh seed. The Titans are going to finish 7-9, despite the fact that they did beat the Broncos this week. That means the Broncos aren't as good as I think they will be, or the Broncos aren't going to be as good as most people think they're going to be. I will have to see how they fare against the Raiders and the Chargers. That's going to decide who gets a shot at that playoff spot out of the AFC West. However, the Colts do have a dilemma. It is a quarterback dilemma. The same quarterback dilemma that has plagued the organization since Andrew Luck's retirement just weeks before the 2019 NFL season. Phillip Rivers was fine on Sunday, and he wasn't the reason the Colts lost to Jacksonville. And the credit there can go to Gardner Minshew, as we talked about before, just obliterating the Colts defense with 95% of his passes. Seems like the Colts secondary is pretty average this year, which is, you know, kind of unfortunate for the Colts. But what makes this situation tough is this. The Colts, in their pursuit of success, are going to have to hide Phillip Rivers just like the 49ers did with Jimmy Garoppolo en route to Super Bowl 54. The Colts knew they weren't signing up for Hall of Fame quarterback Phillip Rivers of the late 2000s and early 2010s, because that much was laid bare last year in Los Angeles, where Rivers threw over 20 interceptions and the Chargers decided that he had nothing left in the tank. They picked Herbert, but they were just like, yeah, we'll take Tyrod Taylor over him, sure. I'm sure they were also hoping to have a quarterback who could do a little bit more than Jacoby Brissett, who was, apart from the injuries, the biggest flaw on a team that, pun intended, limped to a 7-9 record last season. One of the most, like, moments that resonates with me is just how bad Jacoby Brissett played and cost them a chance to take a lead over the Texans in the AFC South in December of last year when they lost on Thursday night to the Texans. And in that moment, the Colts lost their next three games and the season was just over. Like, it was startling how bad Jacoby Brissett played in that Thursday night game against the Texans. And the Colts don't have very much time to wait. And it appears that they are headed for dangerous waters in 2020. Much like last season, the Colts are going to have to hide their shortcomings at quarterback. And this fact seems less promising considering how things went for the 49ers last year. It took the number one defense in the NFL and Kyle Shanahan's near-perfect play calling to get Jimmy Garoppolo to the Super Bowl. Then it was all laid bare when Jimmy Garoppolo was called upon to maintain a lead in the fourth quarter because the Chiefs just straight committed to the run and they were great with run defense in the second half. And then after it fell apart, he was then entrusted to lead a comeback in the second half of the Super Bowl. And he almost did. He almost hit that deep pass from the 50-yard line to score the game-winning touchdown. While the 49ers did prove this system can work, it took a lot of young talent, especially on the defensive side of the ball, and some really good breaks for everything to work out the way it did for the 49ers. What do I mean by good breaks? The 49ers did not have to play the Seahawks in round two. The Vikings upset the Saints. The 49ers got to play the Vikings. Even if they had played the Seahawks and beaten the Seahawks, they would have maybe had the Saints in the next round. The 49ers would have been tested because the two best teams other than them in the NFC were the New Orleans Saints and the Seattle Seahawks. Who did the 49ers play in the playoffs? The Minnesota Vikings and the Green Bay Packers. 49ers got extremely good breaks to help them coast their way into the Super Bowl. The Colts have no shortage of young talent, and they have depth at a number of positions. Frank Reich has proven to be an innovative offensive mind, and he's like a tier below Kyle Shanahan on the play-calling hierarchy that I haven't actually written out. He's just a little bit below him there. Are they as good as the 49ers? Even I, the ultimate Colts optimist who thought at the beginning of the year they'd have a chance to take down the Ravens, but now Lamar Jackson looks even more accurate than he was before. We'll see how it plays out over a long stretch. I'm not willing to give it all in yet. Still seems like a bit of a stretch to say they are as good as the 49ers. And I am a staunch Colts optimist, and even I would not go that far on this issue. And this blueprint that the Colts have created took a massive hit in week one when they lost Marlon Mack to a torn Achilles in the first quarter of the season. Now, instead of having the three running back trio, much like San Francisco's Coleman, Mostert, Breida experiment, the Colts will be relying heavily on Jonathan Taylor and implementing some Nyheim Hines in there, which we saw a lot of Nyheim Hines after Marlon Mack went down in week one, and it's going to be interesting to watch because that Viking defense looked bad against the Packers, and they almost covered the spread despite everything that happened. I don't even know how that one happened, but they looked bad against the Packers. And this rushing attack is going to be imperative to the Colts in the absence of a tier two QB. And maybe after Mack got hurt, they kind of said, look, we're going to have to bail a little bit on this rushing attack because they didn't run the ball at all. They made Phillip Rivers throw the ball 40 times a game. And ideally for them, they want Phillip Rivers to be throwing the ball like 25 times a game. They don't want him throwing between 40 and 50 passes in a game. Throwing 25 times in a game and let their offensive line work. Let their defense be the top 10 defense I know they can be. Don't force Phillip Rivers to be Phillip Rivers because then you're going to be the Chargers of last season, just with a more talented offensive line. More time for Phillip Rivers to make those mistakes. Because Phillip Rivers, I'm sorry, I love Phillip Rivers, my childhood idol. Man, he's old. He is old, man. And the problem last year was certainly that more than the offensive line is that he just can't make a lot of the passes that he used to be able to make. It's the same thing we're seeing with Tom Brady, and it's the same thing we're happening with Drew Brees. By the way, crazy stat, Tom Brady is now, of the last 20 years, one of three quarterbacks to have three straight games with a pick six. The other ones are Matt Schaub and Blaine Gabbert. And Matt Schaub was the original OG meme of the pick six, and Blaine Gabbert is like 2-17 career as a starter. Something really crazy like that. Like Blaine Gabbert, it might be wrong about that. Maybe Blaine Gabbert has never won a start. It was either him or Zach Mettenberg has never won a start in their career. I just can't remember which one it was. But man, these guys are old. And Phillip Rivers is going to make some mistakes. And then you're going to Jameis Winston, Tom Brady ball. Because again, I said at the start of the year, Tom Brady is not a significant upgrade, if any upgrade, over Jameis Winston. I said at the beginning, as far as Tom Brady is not an upgrade to Jameis Winston. And look, this week the Colts get to play at home against the lowly Vikings, and the point spread on that game is rather favorable. And this one may be a tease for what might end up being a lock of the week. But look, this should be an opportunity to right the ship on offense for the Colts. Because, look, they're in this position of quote-unquote power, but if they can't come out with a win in this one, those who are Colts optimists are going to start to sweat. It's like that meme with the bear. I might add this to the cover art this week, that meme of the bear who is sweating in the video where it looks like he's defusing a bomb, or you can go to Jordan Peele. Both of those are like you're just sweating through this frame. Because it doesn't look like the Colts are going to kill teams this year. It looks like they're going to struggle through a lot of these games, or at least the one where the defense doesn't play like a top defense like the 49ers had, like we saw the Steelers play against the Giants last week. The Steelers actually looked more like the 49ers than the Colts looked like the 49ers, actually more than the 49ers looked like the 49ers. That one is a funny idea to think about, is that they looked more like the 49ers than the 49ers looked like the 49ers. And they should be able to beat up on lowly teams like the Jaguars and Vikings. Plus, like we talked about before, they have the easiest schedule in 2020. So even if they do, the Colts will still be fine. And all of this should go a long way to helping the Colts win the AFC South. When we talk about how good that defense is, when we talk about their strength of schedule, when we talk about having games against the Vikings, all of that is going to help them as they get closer and closer towards that final schedule. And however, the issue is there are 8 division winners and 2 really good wild cards who play in tough divisions. Being in the top 8 should not be what Chris Ballard's hope is. It would be ideal. I mean, there are worse ways to go. But that's where the Colts were 2 years ago. And I've talked about it for over a year. Actually, the day Andrew Luck retired, I said, Andrew Luck just aborted a 5-year dynasty in the NFL. And yes, the Andrew Luck retirement could have blown this whole thing up. They have so much young talent. Darius Leonard, Quentin Nelson, Malik Hooker, and, well, those are just the first-round picks. Like, it goes depth at certain positions even help the Colts. When you talk about Parrish Campbell and, what is it, Michael Pittman Jr., the guy, I believe he's USC, right? Shout out USC if that is the case. And, look, the Colts are a team I'm super high on. I said they have a chance to host Baltimore in a playoff game. It looks crazy now to think that. And, you know, the Baltimore looked really good. It's going to take more time for me to give definitive conclusions on this because remember, well, most of you won't remember, but in October last year, I basically called Lamar Jackson Damian Lillard. He might be in the MVP conversation, but he's not really going to win. And then obviously here we are now. I have been, going against Lamar Jackson for a while. But considering how deflating an 0-2 start would be against the Jaguars and at home against the Vikings, that's a tough idea to think about. Again, it wouldn't be the end-all, be-all for the Colts. They made it to the final 8 after a 1-5 start in 2018. And they don't play, like we said before, they don't play a team better than the Ravens, Packers, or Steelers in 2020. But even if they lose those games, that's already 5 losses, which means they are probably looking at needing near perfection, or at least they're looking at 1 Texans loss away from choking away that division. It would cause a little bit of sweat for people like me who had them competing with the likes of Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes in January. Not just being a step-over game like Buffalo was for Houston last year or Minnesota was for San Francisco, like legitimately competing with Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes in January. Not necessarily winning, but at the very least competing. And so I want to take the Colts with a -3 this weekend to upend the Minnesota Vikings. That's going to be a dun-dun lock it in once we get to Sunday. We'll revisit that on Sunday's episode of Wired Up, which will be the remainder of our NFL preview for however much left we have in this week in the NFL. I would go into this Miami-Boston game, which is now officially 2 hours away. Not the baseball game. Again, the Red Sox took 2 out of 3 against the Marlins. That one had already concluded. Now we got the D-backs trailing 3-0 to the Angels in what has become a meaningless game. The Mariners' offense is cranking it out as well as now, as right now. But I am talking about the NBA in this circumstance with the Boston and the Miami game tonight, which if you're listening to this on Saturday on the Take It Easy podcast feed, it is possible that you have already seen this game and game 3 may be going on as you are listening to this. And I appreciate the loyalty of everyone who is finding the Take It Easy radio show. And so I feel confident in the Heat tonight. They just stole a game from the Boston Celtics. And well, we were talking about this on Wednesday's episode of the podcast about how the Celtics need to steal one or they need to dominate one against the Heat. I think Boston is good enough to dominate Miami. I also think Miami is good enough to dominate Boston. And if you tune into tomorrow's episode of Take It Easy, there's going to be a deeper breakdown of this game and what the Miami Heat are going to look like and why this is the only time in at least the last 20 years, if not in NBA history, that a team like the Miami Heat could possibly exist. Assuming they're up 2-0 tomorrow. If it's 1-1, I still think they're probably in a good position. They're playing with house money tonight. I said it during game one. They were playing with house money during game one once they got to that overtime because Boston had that game. They were up 9 points with 6 minutes left. Miami stole that one from Boston. Now Miami's playing with house money. They are going to be in a great position either way. If they go down 2-1 against Boston, I don't think they're in as great of a position. But for now, they are in a great, great position right now going forward. I would be happy to talk about the NHL here a little bit, but game 6 is tonight. I'm going to wait until that Stanley Cup is finalized to break that down. Shout out to the Dallas Stars for putting away those Vegas Golden Knights and Robin Lehner and Marc-Andre Fleury. Good job out of them for putting that one away because you do not want to let anyone come back in this series, Tampa Bay. You do not want to give the Islanders a bit of breath so that they can get up and keep fighting. That is not an ideal situation. But I will have to wait a little bit for that one to see how things go. Shout out Anton Khudobin. Anton Khudobin. I'm just trying to make sure I remember his name because, spoiler alert, I had to Google that one up. I know Varlamov is the goalie for the Islanders. Tampa Bay, obviously, Vasilevsky, Nikita Kucherov. A lot of guys I know their name if I see them on the ice. I just need a word association to remember them while I'm watching hockey. But I'm going to have the hockey game. I'm going to have the NBA game, football game. No baseball today. We're talking about all these games right now, but the only one that really matters tonight is the Blue Jays and the Yankees game, and even that one doesn't really matter that much. Shout out Anthony Rendon just went deep for the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. That was such a strange contract it was. I'm kind of just bouncing around here. We got 10 minutes left in the show, so let's talk Nuggets Lakers real quick. I said before the Celtics Heat series that the Celtics had a 60% chance of advancing. And I knew what that meant in my own head, is how confident I was in the Celtics. Well, I just saw on ESPN's FPI index. I'm sorry, not FPI. That's Football Power Index. ESPN's projection thing. The Lakers have a 61% chance against the Nuggets, which means experts are saying the Nuggets have as good of a chance as the Heat to advance in the playoffs. In my mind, I'm like, oh, I could see a scenario where the Heat make the NBA Finals. You're telling me the Nuggets have the same chance?
All right. Unfortunately, I think we have we lost Kyle. He was getting into that Nuggets and also getting into the Nuggets versus Lakers, and I think he was getting into the Miami Heat versus the Celtics. I think the Lakers, as we prepare to close this show, I think the Lakers, they better not take the Nuggets lightly. The Nuggets, they're playing out of their mind right now. The Nuggets, they're playing like they have nothing to lose, and that's a dangerous team to have a team like that that basically has nothing to lose. So for me, I don't want to overstep as we try to get Kyle back onto the show. I don't want to overstep, but I'm picking the Lakers, picking the Nuggets to dethrone the Lakers. But we're gonna bring Kyle back onto the show.
Oh, can you hear me, Martez?
Yeah, we lost you, huh?
Okay. I was still going on with analysis, and then I heard you come on and say that you couldn't hear. I was confused. I'm like, I'm right here. Can you not? So wait a minute. Before you go real quick, you got the Nuggets unseating the Lakers here?
Yeah. And It's partly because I'm not a LeBron fan, so I hate on everything LeBron. It's like 50% of that, and the other 50% is good. The other 50% is because I think the Nuggets are playing with house money. They have nothing to lose. I'm big on that. If you have nothing to lose, you tend to play better. And I think they're the ultimate underdog right now, and I think they're going to pull off the upset. I see it going 7 games.
So are you? Oh. Okay, do you have it being like the Lakers jump out ahead and then it all comes back to bite them? Or, well, or also another question, that too, but also do you have Nuggets and Heat now? Do you have the weird Nuggets Heat NBA Finals?
Yes, I mean, from a business standpoint, I would love to see Lakers Celtics. Like, that's money right there, and that's history. But right now I have the Miami Heat and I have the Nuggets. I don't see the Celtics beating the Miami Heat. Now, the Miami Heat is my odds-on favorite to win the championship anyway, whoever they play from the West. Miami, I think they're poised. Woo! I think they're ready. And that's my pick.
I mean, I would be shocked if it happens. Less shocked than I was probably a couple days ago. But
yeah,
the favorites, that is ballsy.
Yep.
Oh my gosh!
That's another team that's playing with house money. Nobody expected them to get this far. You know, Jimmy Butler is playing out of his mind. He has that team playing out their mind, I really do believe Miami is the heavy favorite. I really do.
So you've got them tonight, because I got Miami going up 2-0, and then talking about it on tomorrow's podcast.
Yeah, I got them winning tonight. I do see that series going 6 games. They're not just going to run over the Celtics, but I see it going 6. I think Boston ties up over the next few days to make it 2-2, and then I think Miami caps it off with the last 2 victories.
Woo! I mean, that would be fun to watch, only because I know Boston has 3 players that are almost equal to Miami's 3 players, and not a lot of teams in the NBA have 3 good players, because, like, even the ones that are left, like, it's Kuzma and it's Michael Porter, and for the Clippers it was Lou Williams, and the Bucks it was Brooke Lopez. So, like, whoever they play, Miami and Boston have, like, players – 3 through 7 as the best in the series.
Right. Yeah, definitely. And my man Jamal, he's commenting on Facebook. He's disappointed that the show is only 1 hour. But he was looking forward to going on a rant about the Clippers, how they choked.
It's fun. We've been making fun of the Clippers for days, and it's fun.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Thanks, Martez, for keeping everything going there real quick, and for your insight, because it's appreciative. It's talking to myself and talking Nuggets, Lakers, and all that, but thanks for keeping everything afloat there real quick.
No problem. That's my job, to step in. I got your back. Feel free to call on me anytime you need to.
For sure. Well, we got a few minutes left here in the show. Oh, what were you saying?
One last thing. Also, feel free to tell me how crazy I am when I make predictions like Miami versus the Nuggets. So.
Well, here's the thing is that I keep making predictions based on precedent. I keep being wrong. I kept saying, look, the Clippers are going to go through. Clippers are going to go through the West. There's no one going to stop the Bucks. The Bucks are going to beat Miami in 5. Now, obviously, Giannis got hurt. So, you know what? At this point, we're just throwing precedent out the window because the Nuggets and the Heat might show up in the NBA Finals, and that would be a truly 2020 NBA Finals, is just two teams that are just kind of in the top 8.
Oh, yeah.
I love that. I also – so out of the dudes on Boston, are you – which one gives you the most optimism? Is it Tatum? Is it Kemba? Or is it Jaylen Brown?
I would say Tatum. Tatum, of course.
Okay.
Yeah, Tatum.
Because I don't know. I love Kemba, but I just don't know whether it's defenses are committing to him or he's just missing shots at this point. So I think I tend to agree with you on Tatum, but I love me some Kemba Walker.
Yeah, I used to love Kemba Walker too. But for me, Kyle, like it's easy for me to forget he's on that team. Like the other day when I was watching him play, I forgot he was on that team. Obviously, I knew he was on there, but he's not as noticeable as a Tatum or a Brown right now.
Yeah, Jaylen Brown has been great on that point, but for Kemba, it's so easy. Just take him off the point line, and you've got a pretty good situation. He hits those step backs a lot, but you'll live with him hitting a step back jumper from the elbow.
Right.
All right. I think Martez is still there, but you cut out real quick there. But oh, there we go. Cool. You cut out there. It was like quick. I was confused a little bit there. So thanks again for taking over real quick and for your NBA playoff analysis.
No problem.
All right. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for stopping in today to the Take It Easy podcast. Well, Take It Easy Podcast Network or the Take It Easy Radio Show. Got to work on that a little bit. It's once a week. It's the Take It Easy Radio Show here on Open Talk 313 The Flash. Check us out. We will be back again Thursday breaking down whatever is going on in the world. I know for sure there's a Jaguars-Dolphins annual Thursday night football tradition of crappy teams playing in the middle of September on Thursday night football, so we'll at least have that. We got the Bengals and Browns tonight, and we got more NBA, NHL, MLB, college football. Even if I said I'm punting on the season, it's still going to be going on. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Also, thank you to everyone checking us out on the Take It Easy podcast feed. Download, rate, review, subscribe there, wherever it is that you get your podcast. Thank you for stopping in, everybody. Have a great rest of your Thursday. Thank you.